Blog Talk Radio.
Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Monday, February the 27th, the last Monday of February, as we're moving fast in 2023. As we like to do on Mondays, we'll be chatting with our good friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. We have a lot to get into, so let's say hello to our friend Bill. How's the weather in New York, Bill?
The actual weather that comes from nature looks pretty good. As a matter of fact, later this week, it's going to be, they say, in the 50s. That is global warming, of course, and what happened in Minnesota last week and in California where they had snowstorms, that's also global warming. I want you to be aware of that.
That's right.
Everything now is global warming, so we all know what's causing this. And if we
tornado in Oklahoma was global warming too, Bill.
That was global warming, and also if we don't get rid of some of these really horrible devices like X-ray machines I look around and I see the kind of sinner I've been all my life. I think the world is going to come to an end. I really do. I think AOC told me that. The world is
going
to come to an
end. That's right. Yeah, we're all getting, we're counting down the number of times we'll do chats because any moment it could be our last one due to global warming.
I'm afraid that's true.
Yeah, so we're kind of counting them down and treasuring each one of them so that we recognize that AOC is counting down the last days of mankind. But quite a lot to get into, Bill, as always. But I wanted to bring this up because this is the kind of story that sometimes doesn't get coverage in the media. And I'm not bashing the media. It's just not a topic that a lot of people, talk about. But I saw a story this morning about automobile insurance going up significantly for most Americans. And for somebody like me, well, it goes up like everybody else. But this is exactly what inflation does. And this is why deadly, that a lot of things that you don't normally think about, you think of inflation, you think of gasoline, you think of food, maybe the rent, if you're renting an apartment. But then all of a sudden you get your automobile insurance bill and it goes up 15%. And you say, wait a minute, how did this happen? I mean, I don't have a bad record, which is true in my case. And why did it go up? Well, everything else is going up. This is why inflation is such a bad thing and why it's so difficult for the administration to win this inflation argument, Bill.
Yes, well, that's the point. And you make a very good point about insurance. I've noticed my auto insurance has gone up. Now, that could be for a number of reasons, but some of the reasons are inflation, greater expenses. Other reasons are things that we ought to really hit on, and that is crime. Crime produces much higher insurance rates for automobiles because more cars are being stolen, more cars are being bashed. Somebody has to pay the bill for those replacements, and of course the insurance policy owner is eventually going to be billed for that. So when people say, well, we've always had crime, the crime rate has gone up dramatically. It is affecting insurance rates. I think the insurance companies are trying to keep those rates as low as possible because they know that they can lose a lot of customers. People will either give up a second car if they have a second car, or they will sell their car and buy a less expensive one that requires a lower insurance cost. But yes, insurance rates are going up. Things are going up, as you pointed out, that people normally don't think about. They think about what they see in the supermarket, and that's
right.
going up as well. And it isn't stopping. I mean, we
that's
were told
right.
that, well, it's petering out. It's not. It's getting worse and worse and worse. And it is amazing to me that there is not more a pushback on the part of the public. I mean, I hope they don't get used to these prices and say, well, that's the way things are.
Well, the point you made about crime is a great one, because I was going to bring that up. That, I mean, most of these automobile insurance companies are really national companies. In very few cases, both of our cars are insured by national companies. So
yes.
these companies are dealing in the whole country. So even, you know, let's say the North Texas area is safer, let's say, than other area. But, you know, all these expenses have to be shared by all the policyholders. And you're right. I mean, whether it's car hijacking or whatever they call it, shoplifting. I mean, we see these scenes of people walking out of 7-Elevens with, you know, all kinds of things they're stealing. Eventually, that will come back to the price we pay for things.
Sure.
And, you know, I don't know how else to say it, but when we got our bill at the very first week of the year, I said, man, and I called my insurance agent, who's a really good friend of mine from church, and I knew that it wasn't his fault. I mean, I just called him to get a reading on it, and he said, yeah, I mean, all my policies are going up. And then I said, well, what are you hearing from the company? And he says, well, everything is going up. And he even mentioned to me that what he called the cost of doing business, which is, of course, crime and everything else, too, that everything is going
up. Yes.
So it's just fascinating because, you know, we have not had any politician, to my knowledge, mention automobile insurance going up. But, yeah, that's a big deal. If your automobile insurance goes up 10%, that's one more thing out of your budget that's got to come out of somewhere else in your budget, Bill.
That's right. And the Democratic administration in Washington is probably happy that automobile insurance is going up, because they want people not to own cars, unless they're electric cars, which they promise us will be so much better. And according to a lot of stories I'm reading, they will not be so much better, and that they're very untested, and we may be walking into a disaster. One of the things also to point out is that apparently there's been an increase in automobile accidents, and they're baffled as to why. I don't know why, but apparently there has been an increase, and we all know what these auto body shops cost when they get your car in there, so that will also go into the general scheme of things. Also for people who want a new car, the new cars are extraordinarily expensive, and they don't give the kind of discounts they used to. Now, they may have to in the future, because if the economy weakens, and it seems to be weakening, they may want to incentivize buying cars. But it's the economic picture is not good. We put on a lot of new jobs. I'd like to see what kind of jobs we're actually adding, and whether they're, you know, just basic jobs that go with the seasons, but the economy just doesn't feel good. It really doesn't. And
yeah.
I think that added to all the other things in the country that seem to be going wrong, I think we're going to have a very frustrated society this year.
Yes, and another thing going on with automobiles, I saw a story here recently that car loan delinquencies are up significantly too. Loan delinquencies are up to like 2009 levels, which was the last time we had a major recession. So all of this, you know, and then what was it, on Monday or Friday of last, I think Friday of last week, Bill, that the Inflation Reduction Act, not the Inflation Reduction Act, but I mean inflation went up unexpected. I love that when that happens, unexpected.
Yes,
One economic report, Bill, that was expected. Would you like to see
yes.
one of those?
Yes.
Because everyone is unexpected.
It's always unexpected. And inflation is going up unexpectedly.
Yes.
the prices of other things are going up unexpectedly. And what I think what we are seeing in the country more than anything else is uncertainty. People
yes.
really don't know what their future is, and we have no real national leadership. The treatment of the people in Ohio after this accident was abysmal. I mean, it was as if they were being punished for living in a conservative district. And we're going to be facing substantial increases in the cost of national defense because our stockpiles are being eroded by what we are doing in Ukraine. That doesn't mean we shouldn't be doing it, but there's a cost. Somebody has to pay these bills. And I think that the press coverage, as usual, is very shallow, very uninterested, and I mean, it's not very explanatory. Yes, and I think it is we are getting the same kind of malaise we had during Jimmy Carter's administration, where people just feel things are not good. I don't know what to do. I don't know where the country is going. And he was not able to tell us, which is why we changed presidents.
Right.
But yeah, I think so.
No, and the other thing, too, I think what when you have a malaise like this, a lot of it is a reflection that people are a bit concerned about the pilot. And in this case, the co-pilot doesn't make you feel any better either. So I think a lot of people are concerned about it. And I think you just sit back. But what you mentioned about Ohio is unbelievable. I mean, I wasn't expecting the president of the United States to fly to Ohio the next day. I realized that, you know, you can't just do that when you're the president. You just cannot fly in. But I think he should have been there within a week. And simply, you know, come with the first lady and shake a few hands and say, hey, we're here to support you. And, you know, everything is, we're with you. We care about you. That kind of thing. He could have done that in a week.
Yeah.
I don't know what the Secretary of Transportation was doing, but he could have been there sooner. And the vice president, usually that's what vice presidents do. A lot of times they'll take a trip like this to a location. But it seems like it seems like this White House bill doesn't seem to have any show any interest whatsoever in these people in Ohio, and it's just fascinating to me because these are the kinds of opportunities that could make a president. These are the kinds
That's
of opportunities
right.
that could turn people around and say, "Hey, he does care about us. We didn't vote for him, but the guy cares about us." And it seems like they just passed it up, Bill. They just said, "We're too busy. We're too busy." I guess they're too busy with Ukraine. I support helping Ukraine. I think it's a good idea to be helping Ukraine. But, you know, it seems like you shouldn't have to choose between Ohio and Ukraine, Bill.
Well, that's a very, very good point that you make. I mean, we are a wealthy country. We're supposed to be a powerful country. Nothing really seems to be going well. Maybe I can point to a few little gems in terms of the pushback against woke education. There are some good stories coming out of some of our colleges and universities and out of some school districts where people are pushing back and are getting results. But other than that, we have a president who wants to run again. I mean, if he survives, and the reality in the Democratic Party is they. Most Democrats don't want him to run according to the polls, but they also don't want Kamala Harris to be president. We have it's a unique situation. We really haven't had this since 1944 when President Roosevelt was obviously in very bad shape, and Henry Wallace was the vice president during World War II. They knew that he would be president if was kept on the Democratic ticket in 1944, and they basically took care of business and replaced him with Harry Truman. Wallace was much too far to the left to be president.
Right.
They knew that. And they did their patriotic duty and did it well. But I haven't had this feeling about the country since the late 1970s. The 70s were not a great period in American history. And, of course, the Carter administration, I don't mean to speak ill of him, he's on his deathbed after all, but he did not really inspire Americans the way Ronald Reagan did, who was the next president. Maybe we will find that inspirational figure. I do think the Republican Party has many such figures. including Ron DeSantis, of course. The Democratic Party is leaderless. I mean, they don't have any bench of any kind. The biggest story out of the Democratic Party that I saw in the last week was that the progressive left in New York wants to run a primary candidate against Senator Gillibrand, who is a Democratic United States Senator from New York with absolutely no record. I mean, she's been in office now for how many years? It must be, is it two terms?
Well, Hillary Clinton ran, right?
Yes,
the year that Hillary Clinton
ran,
right? Yeah.
Yes, and I think she took over Hillary Clinton's seat, as a matter of fact, in the Senate. I think so. I'm not sure. But she has no record. The point was made by a commentator. She could walk into most venues in New York and nobody will know who
right.
she is. She has no, I mean, she wanted to run for president and had to quickly withdraw. And the feeling is on the part of the leftists in the Democratic Party that 2024 is their opportunity to get rid of her and to replace her with who? AOC. And
that's
so
what I was thinking,
a lot of
that it would be.
Yeah,
that's what I was thinking. She'd be the perfect one, wouldn't she, Bill? AOC
for the left, yes.
Yeah, for the that's what I mean for the left.
They don't care that she's a dim bulb, and that
right,
she's never
right.
accomplished anything. She's AOC, and they
right.
feel that they can put in a progressive senator and perhaps groom her for the White House. That's the way these people think. It's also an opportunity, though, for the Republican Party to pick up a Senate seat in an unexpected place if they put up the right candidate. But the Republican Party is asleep at the switch, as usual, in New York. And I don't know if they know there's even an election. We will send them letters, tell them that there's an election. But they're going to have a really big-time candidate to win that seat and put it in the Republican column.
Maybe, Bill, the answer is the gentleman who just lost the election for governor, Lee Zeldin. Maybe
Lee
he would
Zeldin
be
would
the.
Be great.
Maybe he. At least it's a good candidate. You know, at least he'd be a good candidate. But I just find that the way that these people in Ohio have been treated is so bad, and that you feel for them because they've gone through a very difficult time, Bill. I mean, this is not easy. What they've gone through. I mean, I heard that. You know, the water has been poisoned, that animals have died, that there has been perhaps some health damages to some of these people. And it's like, you know, nobody seems to care about them. And it's really an amazing thing. Bill, let me bring up one topic here before we get to DeSantis and other things. I just want to bring up the topic of China and this lab. I'm sure, Bill, you remember when it was racist to even suggest that the virus or whatever had come from a Chinese lab. People were ridiculed and destroyed in the media. They were canceled in some social media places for even I'm not even saying it, just even suggesting the possibility that it could be coming out of a China lab. Now, apparently, there's a report that it did happen that way. Now, it has not been confirmed. I think it's one of those leaks that what they call it. But if this is true, Bill, this is really, you're talking about China all of a sudden becomes, in my opinion, the number one foreign policy issue of 2024. If this is true about the leak or the virus leaking out of the lab or whatever. And I think that all of a sudden you're going to have some president is going to have to challenge China and demand that China put up some money to cover some of the damage the world suffered because of COVID, Bill.
Well, that would be a good thing if it happened. I don't think it's going to. We are dealing with a situation in which China, which is an enemy of the United States, has enormous influence in the United States. There are very, very important business connections between the United States and China, and it's hard to punish them. We also have, at the present time, fear of a military confrontation with China, and I don't think we can rule that out. I mean, if I were the Chinese president right now, I would look at the United States as a country of uncertain strength, a country that really wants to avoid another war and really has no great interest in Taiwan. And I might choose this as the minute to strike. And that's what I'm concerned about. I think that the problem that that China presents to us is primarily, in the short run, an economic problem, but in the long run, a military problem. If we are weak in Asia, we will not only risk a war with China, we will risk losing our Asian allies, because they are not going to put up with a weak United States. But countries like South Korea and Japan and the Philippines and some of the others.
Australia.
Australia will start moving in China's direction if they feel that we are not sufficiently strong to confront China. That's what appeasement does.
Right. Now, one question that I had, Bill, last week we heard that we have been beefing up our military, support or military troops in that part of the world, either moving Marines into Taiwan or nearby. I still do not understand. I'm not against it, but I don't understand on what basis the president can act like that. I thought he would, at the very least, had to go to Congress and say, look, I need a resolution to do this, and for this reason, because we want to make sure, or we want to deter China from going into Taiwan. But it seems like he's acting without any kind of constitutional support here, Bill. And maybe I'm crazy in what I'm saying, but I always thought the president had to go to the Congress for something like this, Bill.
Well, actually, the issue of presidential authority applies to going to war. In other words, he can move troops around. He can move the armed forces around. That has been done regularly through American history. Now, it was President Roosevelt who, a year before the attack on Pearl Harbor, moved the headquarters of the Pacific Fleet from the west coast of the United States to Hawaii. And little did we know that they would be attacked there. But though the president has certain authority as commander-in-chief over the armed forces and its disposition, its policies, its training, and all the rest, the issue is how much authority does he have to commit those forces to combat. We have the War Powers Act, which I think gives the president only a limited amount of time to use military power, and
right.
Then he would have to report to Congress. But I think that what is really required here is some kind of presidential address to the country.
Mm-hmm.
This man
yeah.
doesn't communicate very well for obvious reasons, and he does not keep the country informed. I would certainly want to hear a speech on what our obligations are to Taiwan, why we have those obligations. The people can then debate it and say yes or no, but we are given no real information. White House press secretary is unqualified for the job. And the president seems very reluctant to speak to his own constituency. As far as the vice president, that is a real drag on this administration. I mean, mm-hmm. I don't know how the Democratic ticket can survive next year, which is when the presidential election is, but it might, and it might even go on to victory. But I've never seen a situation where the vice presidential candidate is actually feared by the country. And I think that's exactly the way people feel about her. They're afraid she might become president.
That's right. Well, I agree with you that the president can move troops around. That is correct. But he may be putting troops in harm's way, because he may
yeah,
be
sure.
tempting the Chinese to do something. He may be putting troops in a way, or positioning troops in a way that China could find offensive. And they may say, oh, you're going to do that? We're going to react like this. So I'm just afraid that we may be sort of getting into a war with China without public support, without the presidential speech that you mentioned, and without anybody in Congress voting up and down on it. That's just what concerns me. I agree with you. I would like to see a presidential address that says, look, this is what I'm doing, and this is why we're doing it, and this is why Taiwan is important. I think I could probably support that, Bill, but I kind of like to see it in a formal presentation, not just read in the papers that, we're putting 10,000 Marines in wherever we're putting them, Bill, to send a message, Bill.
Yeah, well, I agree with you. Now, we are putting a couple of hundred troops into Taiwan itself as training personnel. And for people of a certain age, it sounds familiar because that's the way we got involved in Vietnam. We sent in training operations first. Those troops on Taiwan are obviously vulnerable to any attack. I mean, if the Chinese decided to invade Taiwan, those troops could be killed. And then what do you do? Or maybe he's doing it for that very reason, as what they call a tripwire, where the Chinese know that if they invaded Taiwan, they would be killing American troops, and they may be very reluctant to do that.
Right. Well, you know as well as anybody, before we take a little break here, you know as well as anybody how quickly you can go from having people on the ground training South Vietnamese troops to having 500,000 soldiers in Vietnam. You know how quickly
that was.
I mean,
three
years, maybe even, you know, when President Kennedy was assassinated, we did not have combat troops in South Vietnam, as I recall, but we sure had a lot of trainers, you know, people training them, right?
Yes, it was Lyndon Johnson who sent the first combat troops in.
Right.
And I think it was what was called in that era the Air Mobile Division. And it got bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. There was congressional support. They did authorize these things, and they authorized the expenditures that go with them. Right now, I think that many Americans want to help Ukraine. They want to know more about it. They want to know what our obligations are there. How long will this take? And are we... And other Americans want to say, are we sending enough? We certainly don't want to get into a situation where it goes on and on and on with no result, because Americans have had those, and they're tired of them.
That's right. Well, I think a little helping of Ohio could have probably helped the case for Ukraine. I mean, I think that the way it came out that we're forgetting about Ohio and we're helping Ukraine, I think that probably hurt a little bit the situation, Bill. We're going to take a little break, and we'll be right back with our friend Bill right after this. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, chatting with our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Bill, when I was talking about Vietnam, I couldn't think of the word, and it just came to me during the musical break. Mission creep. That's what I couldn't...
Yes, that's exactly right. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mission creep, I think that's what they called it. And that's when you get yourself into these things where, you know, the mission keeps creeping, I guess, and then all of a sudden you have a bunch of troops. Bill, very quickly, I wanted to get your reaction to this. Elizabeth Taylor was born on this day in 1932. I guess I'm old enough to remember that she was a very beautiful woman and made a lot of movies. I thought anybody who could go from playing one of the Marsh sisters in Little Women to Cleopatra must have been a pretty good actress. So, I mean, she was a beautiful woman. Was she just beautiful or a good actress? What's your opinion?
No, she was a good actress. She was considered a good actress. She was tumultuous in the sense that her private life was tumultuous. She gained a great deal of popularity, I think, in the 1940s, 1950s. It sort of faded after that. First of all, she became somewhat overweight. The parts were not coming her way, the good parts. She could act with the best of them, but I think that her status as a public figure declined quite a bit over the years. There was a lot of bad publicity about her marriages and her demands and things of that nature. I never met Elizabeth Taylor. I understand she was exceptionally intelligent, read a great deal, could discuss a lot of things. She was not just a Hollywood fixture, but I think that she is not really remembered as the towering figure that she probably would have liked to have been.
Yeah. Well, I just remember watching here recently a movie, Hot Cat on the Tin Roof. What was the name of that cat on the...
Cat on the Hot Tin Roof. And
yes,
that was by Tennessee Williams. Yes.
That's right, the play by Williams that they made a movie, I think, with Paul Newman was in that movie. That was on recently in one of the retro channels. And, of course, every once in a while they show Cleopatra, which I mean, she looks beautiful as Cleopatra, but I just think that movie is a bit of overkill. Whoever had to design all that stuff, I mean, that must have been one heck of the choreography in that movie must have been one heck of a job, Bill.
Oh, yes. And I remember when they were making it, it was way over budget. And I think she got sick during it, something like that. But I do remember it was considered something of a Hollywood scandal. You know, she was capable of a great deal. She was married to Richard Burton for a long time, and the British actor. Then she was married to a U.S. senator, Senator Warner.
From Virginia, yeah. That's right, that's right.
So she sampled politics. She sampled Great Britain. She sampled this. She sampled that. And I think in the end she kind of faded away as kind of a relic of an old era.
Yeah, well, I remember reading today that she was born in London. And of American parents, and then came back to the United States. And here recently they showed Little Women, and she's one of the four little women, I guess, in that movie. But she was a very beautiful woman in her prime. Well, let's move on to another interesting topic here, Bill, and that's Senator Fetterman of Pennsylvania, who I think it's a real tragedy. I mean, if I was a voter in PA, I'd be very angry at his family, because this man, there are all kinds of rumors, and I don't like to peddle rumors, so I'll just say there are rumors that he's actually worse off than meets the eye, some people saying that he could potentially be brain dead. I mean, I don't know if that's true, but that's out there. And, you know, I would think that if his family would show a little bit more love for this man, who should have never been allowed to run and should have been at home all year long recovering. And, you know, right now you get into a very cynical situation because there are certain deadlines ahead of us.
That's right.
One deadline, if he resigns, I think in the 60 days or something, which we're coming up to that deadline soon, then there has to be a brand new election, a whole new election. But if they go, I think, past August, then he appoints a successor who would then have to run in 2024. So, I mean, that's the situation that this poor guy is in. I just feel horrible for him. I'm not sure how much he had to do with being in this situation, but I would have never allowed a family member of mine to do this, Bill.
Well, I fully agree with you, and I also think that the press was absolutely irresponsible in not coming down hard on the idea that a U.S. senator, of course we're concerned about him personally as a human being, but he represents a state. He represents people who have real needs from members of Congress. He is obviously not in very good shape, and he was not in good shape when he ran. He barely could talk. And the idea that we have to – that we put up a candidate like that is not funny. It's not that people say, oh, I think it's wonderful that a man like that was allowed to run. I don't think so. He cannot perform the full job. It's obvious now. And people depend on that. That's why we have a Democratic government. I don't know what's going to happen. I read the same story as you did, that the wife apparently took off when he went into the hospital and went to Canada or something, and we don't know where she is. But I would hope that he would do the right thing and leave office relatively soon. If he cannot return to full work, and he wasn't even doing full work before, so I don't know what it's going to be now. But there's a lot of talk now about whether we should have a cognitive test for the President of the United States. We know who that's directed at. I do think that we should have some reasonable understanding that a person in high public office is physically well enough to do the job. And I don't know how we certify that. Maybe there are ways that we can do it quickly, but it's the people of the country who owns the Senate. He doesn't own the Senate.
Mm-hmm.
And as much sympathy as we want to have for him, and his family doesn't own the Senate. And the way these things are going these days, you think they did. This is a bad situation. It reminds us of the presidential situation where we have a president who is mentally impaired and a vice president who is hopeless. So it's a bad situation.
But it's a bad situation for Chuck Schumer, too, Bill, because he's now at 50-49 in his count without Fetterman. Fetterman cannot participate, and I don't think he can vote. He has to be present to vote, I believe, in the Senate. So if he cannot go to the Senate floor and vote, Schumer has 50. And now that we're hearing that Senator Manchin doesn't call himself a Democrat anymore, which I thought was pretty funny, ever since he voted for the Inflation Reduction Act, he doesn't call himself a Democrat anymore, Bill. You take Manchin out of the picture, and now it's 49-49, Bill, or 49-50,
yes,
potentially. So, the Democrats, their majority doesn't work like they thought it was going to work, Bill.
No, it really doesn't. And we're going to have another election, of course, next year, in which the placement of the senators in the order in which they're elected, we every 2 years elect a third of the Senate. It doesn't favor the Democrats next year. They have a lot of vulnerable seats. We don't know how the presidential race will affect the race for the Senate. But the Democratic position in Washington is not by any means secure. They control one House of Congress, and that could easily disappear. And they control the presidency, and that can easily disappear. I think we're in a very unstable period. I think there are opportunities for Republicans if they seize those opportunities. But if the party is split and they start going to war with each other, then it will be time for a new party.
Yeah. I wanted to say something. When you were talking about Kamala Harris and people being uncomfortable with her, it reminded me, Bill, over the weekend I was talking to somebody about this, people being uncomfortable with Kamala Harris. And I made the example. I remember the example of when the assassination attempt on President Reagan, March 1981. And I was in Mexico City at the time when that happened. I was actually at a restaurant and then walking back to my office. And when I walk into the office, the lady who was the secretary said, your mother's on the phone. And so I went to my office and I picked up the phone. It was my mother calling from Dallas telling me that Reagan, there had been an assassination attempt. So when I walked out after that conversation with my mother, the secretary said, who takes over if Reagan is killed? And I said, well, technically the vice president. And at the time I said that, Bill, I had no idea what his medical condition was. He could have been dead. All I knew was he had been shot and under surgery. But when I said the vice president, I had no doubts in my mind when I said that, Bill, that George Bush could take over. I mean,
that's right.
He was not my first choice, obviously. I voted for Reagan. But I felt completely comfortable if that had happened. Thank God it didn't. But if that had happened and George Bush would have had to take over, I would have been okay with that. I said, okay. Bad luck for President Reagan, but a good man, a capable man, becomes president. That's what I think a lot of people are afraid of with Kamala Harris, Bill. They don't have that confidence, Bill.
Well, they have no confidence. I mean, her ratings, her approval ratings are below those of Biden. And she just does nothing to improve herself. That is what is so depressing. I mean, she's now had time in office to correct the mistakes, to learn to deal with an issue publicly, to not giggle when she's called on in public. People do not feel at all in a situation where we are threatened internationally that they want a Kamala Harris in office. And the question for 2024 is, well, if the Democrats feel negatively toward her, and apparently they do, are they really going to replace her? Because there is the complication that she's a woman of color. These create enormous complications in the Democratic Party, and it's
right.
the cost of identity politics. But
right.
yes, the Republican bench is extremely deep. There are so many good Republicans ready and able to run for president. The Democratic bench is not deep at all.
No.
It really isn't.
It isn't, and it's sort of like the two organizations. One organization has a really good AAA team with a lot of guys they can send up at any moment, and the other organization doesn't have anybody in AAA. That's kind of, using a baseball example, that's kind of the
yes.
way I look at it right now. The Democrats don't have anybody. Now, there are some, you quoted some of the polls today in Urgent Agenda, and I've seen some on television. And I personally don't take them that seriously, Bill, because this is going to matter much until about 6 months from now. And a lot
true.
Depends what we're talking about in 6 months. And if 6 months from now we're talking about China and we're talking about the economy and inflation and the border, I think that helps Donald Trump in a weird sort of way. Donald Trump could now go to the American people and say, when I told you that Russia was fake, I was right. When I told you that this thing came out of China, I was right. And when I told you that Twitter was helping the other campaign, I was right. Now, I'm not saying this, Bill, because I want to vote for Donald Trump, okay? I'm not saying it because I support him. I'm just simply saying that we don't know what the politics is going to be like and what we're going to be talking about. And let me say one more thing about this. If China becomes a primary issue, and I think they will, I think that makes Mike Pompeo all of a sudden a really good vice president, Bill.
Well, he's a good man. I like Mike Pompeo very much. He has the right values. He's very, very bright. He graduated first in his class at West Point. And, it's true that Trump is the gorilla in the room. I mean, it would be a very, very different election approach if Trump were not there. But he is there. My own feeling, I've expressed it before, is that I wish he had retired. He did a lot of good things as president, but I'm not at all sure he can be elected. He is disliked as a person so much that I think that we could do better. I really do. And I think that doing better means Ron DeSantis. And I
right.
think most Americans and most Republicans would like to move on and get new leadership in the country.
Well, I do too. I mean, I feel that way. I like to see us, DeSantis is one of the examples. Youngkin is another example. Governor Abbott here in Texas is a good example.
Yes.
I was getting some questions the other day as to, how could Governor Abbott go to the top of the list? And I said, well, right now he's not at the top of the list. He's in maybe a couple of steps down. But if all of a sudden there's an opening at the top, I mean, he's got the border. He's got the economy. He's been consistent on school choice, on many of the cultural issues. So, I mean, he's somebody that could step in. He's been a good administrator. So all of those things would help him. But there are others. There are others. I think the governor from Georgia, Kemp, would also be a very interesting choice. He's doing a good job over there. I think Tim Scott, the senator from South Carolina, I believe, he's a great guy. He'd be a great candidate as well. So a lot depends on where we are in 6 months, but I keep looking at Donald Trump, and I can see him in a debate with whoever the Democrat is, and the issues are going to be on Trump's side, Bill.
They certainly will be, and if Biden is the nominee of the Democratic Party, I'm not so sure there'll be any debates. He may just decline them, and he has a right to do that. People will get angry and say, well, it's because he's trying to hide his condition. But if he doesn't debate, they won't see that condition. And it's a risky strategy, but it could work. Remember, in the 2020 election, Biden did very little. He stayed in his basement.
That's right. Well, he ran.
And it must be
must be
a nice
He
basement.
Ran a campaign from his basement. I hope he had a pool table or something down there to spend the time. Because, I mean, that's spending all that time inside a basement must have been pretty rough. But See, I think, Bill, again, looking ahead to this primary or these two men, I think Trump made a mistake by declaring so early, that I think he would have been better off holding on or just staying away from declaration. And I like the way DeSantis is doing it. He's not declaring. He's not reacting to any criticism from Trump. He's basically just, you know, he doesn't react to them, which is, I think, smart. And he is doing this tour of blue cities, and he's just driving everybody crazy because he's going around to these blue cities and saying, look, I'm here to tell you about Florida, and we do it this way in Florida, and we do it that way. I think that's brilliant, whoever came up with that bill.
Well, yes. Look, there is great imagination out there if we want to look for it. One thing about both Trump and DeSantis is they are very, very vigorous campaigners. And that's what we need. I mean, we're not going to put up a repressed soul. We need vigorous campaigning. We have, as Republicans, the Republicans have a lot to overcome. They have not done all that well in recent elections. They deserve to do better. They have to right now concentrate on a record in Congress, and I think they will. I think Kevin McCarthy so far has done a good job. But it's not going to be a pushover in 2024 because the press will, again, automatically be in favor of the Democratic candidate. And we've seen that that's got to be worth 4 or 5 points.
Right. Speaking of the press, Bill, a couple of points I wanted to bring up. Did you see the way that Governor DeSantis went after Andrea Mitchell
at
NBC?
I loved it.
I did too. Basically sending out a message saying, we're not going to take any more questions from you guys unless you correct yourself. See, that's what I like about DeSantis. Trump basically does the same thing. But DeSantis seems to do it, I don't know, in a more effective way, if I could put it that way. Because he's got a different personality than Trump does.
That's it. Trump comes off as a thug, and DeSantis comes off as a thug who went to finishing school.
Right.
You know, he's DeSantis is very, very bright. He really is.
He is,
and he's on top of everything. He would make a terrific president. So would a number of other Republicans. You can mention governors. Also, remember there's Kim Reynolds in Iowa,
mm-hmm.
who's doing
yes.
a great job in
great
education.
Job, yeah.
Whereas the Democratic
That's right.
governors. I can't think of one who could be recommended. I mean, Gavin Newsom wants to run for president on the basis of what? it's like the captain of the Titanic running
right.
for first sea lord. You know, I
that's,
mean, it's
that's right. Yeah.
On the basis of what? There are some there. They have the governor of Colorado, who seems to be a Democrat, a reasonable guy. But the Democratic Party at the gubernatorial level is not strong, and that's the level you need right before an election like this.
Yeah, that's where you develop potential candidates at the governor's level. I don't think the governor of New York is running. I don't think she's.
Well, she just did.
Yeah, I know for New York.
Yes,
I mean, but I'm saying
yes.
for president, I don't think
no.
that she would be high on the list of anybody, although her predecessor, Andrew Cuomo, had talked about it, and many people
yeah.
thought he would run, but he got into other trouble. The other thing I wanted to mention about the media, Bill, is there's a story that came out today about CNN, and their ratings are just atrocious. They I mean, they're like drawing 60,000 people an hour. I mean, that's, I don't know, numbers don't add up when that many people are watching you, Bill.
Well, they are atrocious because this is a nation of 330 million people.
That's right.
And they are drawing numbers consistent with a medium-sized city newspaper. And
yes.
apparently, and there's no panic there. I don't see them panicking. They brought this new guy in who was supposed to supervise a transition, but he doesn't seem to – Chris Lichter, I think, is his name. I think he came
yeah.
from the entertainment sector. He doesn't seem to know quite what he's doing. What they need is a journalist of stature who can take over that network. And it might be a conservative and turn it into a really first-class news operation. They're doing some very good work in Ukraine, but on the domestic side, they don't seem to even know their country.
Yeah. Well, what they really need to do is do a facelift. and basically
well, yes.
get rid of every host. Anybody with a connection to the past, they need to get rid of and just start fresh and have all kinds of new faces. Now, I think they thought they were doing that by moving Don Lemon to the morning. That hasn't quite quite worked out. But some of these other people, fair or unfair, they're just not attracting an audience. And I mean, sooner or later, I guess the numbers are going to catch up with them. Well, Bill, I wanted to ask you a quick question here as we wind down. Do you remember when the Brooklyn Dodgers went to spring training? I saw some photos the other day of the Brooklyn Dodgers in spring training. Was that a big deal in Brooklyn? I mean, did you guys get the exhibition games on the radio?
I don't recall whether the exhibition games were on radio, but they did spring training in Vero Beach, Florida, mm-hmm. and they put Vero Beach on the map. But yes, when the Dodgers went into spring training, we knew the season was coming, so it was great anticipation. And I didn't live in Florida. I didn't travel down there for spring training, but spring training was always great because they would put on exhibition games all the time. People would come and sit in those old-time stands, real old baseball stands, and watch great baseball. But, yes, spring training was a big deal.
And how many newspapers did you have in Brooklyn at the time?
Well, in Brooklyn, there was a Brooklyn newspaper called the Brooklyn Eagle, which stopped publishing many years ago. But New York in that period, in the great period, which was 40s and 50s, I think had about 7 daily newspapers. They had the New York Times, the Herald Tribune, the Daily News, the Journal American. That's 4, World Telegram and Sun, it was 5. A Daily Mirror was 6.
And the Eagle,
6.
Then.
Did
each one of them have coverage of the Dodgers or just the Brooklyn Eagle?
Oh, sure. They all had coverage. I mean, the Dodgers were considered they were a major league team there, and
sure.
they were covered extensively. Obviously, the Brooklyn Eagle was able to give it the hometown touch, but the Brooklyn Eagle went out of business. I don't recall what year. It was awfully hard to sustain a newspaper that specialized in one borough. But basically, broadcasting took over. I mean, baseball is an active sport, and people loved watching it on television. I remember the first television program I ever saw was a New York Yankee game. I was brought over to some friend's apartment. They had just gotten their first TV. And we watched the New York Yankees on a 10-inch screen.
Well, that must have been, I tell you, that must have been such an exciting time to be a baseball fan, to live there those three teams. I mean, that must have been so exciting. Of course, spring training is already underway, and exhibition games are underway, and it's like, exhibition games are always interesting because the regulars will play the first 3 innings, and the rest of the game, there's just a bunch of guys who you will never see in the major league team, but I guess they get a chance to play and eat up some innings. So, that's their job, I guess, to eat up a lot of innings while the regulars are getting ready for the season. Well, Bill, have a great day as always. Thank you so much for joining us. And I look forward to our next time.
I look forward to it very much. There's a lot happening in the world, Silvio.
There is. It's a crazy, I don't know, what was the expression? May you live in interesting times?
May you live in interesting times. It's an old Chinese curse.
Well, I think they wrote it for us, Bill.
I'm afraid they did.
They did. Have a great day, Bill, and thank you as always. Keep up the great work at Urgent Agenda.
Thank you. Thank you, Silvio.
All right. Our good friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. I had to ask him there at the end about the Brooklyn Dodgers because I know that Bill was a huge fan. Always enjoy catching up with the history of the Dodgers. Thank you for listening. This is Silvio Cantu in Dallas.